Ralph Bolsted. The session is on the eye or the vision at the window becomes dim. That was all of the titles have been taken actually from the book of Ecclesiastes, the preacher man. I want to read that again, this time in the Good News Bible. The preacher is very cynical. If he'd come to me asking for a diagnosis, I'd say, hey, you have a severe case of depression. But on the other hand, if we listen to him and look, he writes beautiful poetry. And I think that this description of old age is beautiful poetry, even if it is very dismal and, cynical. Still, if we can look at ourselves, look at the problems, we can do as old sort of like the parable of being able to laugh at the wolf at the door. You know he's there, you know that, he has it in for you, but if you can make a joke about it, you've sort of pulled his fangs. The rest of the teeth are still there, but at least the fangs are gone. So, man, I'm getting to be a preacher too.
What's so bad about that?
Well, let's ask the rest of us. So remember the Creator while you're still young, before those dismal days and years come when you will say, I don't enjoy life. That is when the light of the sun, the moon, the stars will grow dim for you, and the rain clouds will never pass away. That sounds like you live in Seattle, doesn't it? Then your arms that have protected you will tremble. Of course, mine did even worse when I was 12 than they do now. And your legs, now strong, will grow weak. It'll be hard to get out of the soft sofa. Your teeth will be too few to chew your food, and your eyes too dim to see clearly. And this was the other translation of that, of the title of this. Your ears will be deaf to the noise of the street. You will barely be able to hear the mill as it grinds or music as it plays. But even the song of a bird will wake you from sleep. You will be afraid of high places. Of course, I've been afraid of high places since I was a kid too, but then. And walking will be dangerous, and that's certainly true. Your hair will turn white. You will hardly be able to drag yourself along, and all desire will be gone. We're going to our final resting place. And then there will be mourning in the streets. The silver chain will snap, and the golden lamp will fall and break. The rope at the well will break, and the water jar will be shattered. Our bodies will return to the dust of the earth, and the breath of life will go back to God who gave it to us. Useless, useless, says the philosopher. It's all useless. It's one of the things that we, as we mature, become senior citizens and beyond, suddenly become aware of, or I did. When I was a kid, I was immortal. I knew I was going to die, but I didn't feel it. And I had to be upwards in my 60s, late 60s, till I began to recognize the fact and feel it, that I was mortal and going to die, and that these things are going to go to pieces that we've been talking about. And so what? That's where our philosophy will have to take us. One of the things, if we look at the things that happen to us, look at our body, see how it works, most of us are able to handle the things that come much better. They don't panic us. They don't frighten us. The unknown threat is by far the worst. You know what? You say, okay. The eye. It's like a big camera. of a little camera. The first part out here, any of you remember, this I'm sure you had these courses in hygiene or whatever it was they called it in our day, something on that order, and have learned the different parts and so on, but why don't we review it? Do you remember what, any of you?
It's a lens.
It's a lens, it's very much a lens, but not the lens of the eye.
Yeah, sure.
The
sclera,
the sclera is this part, is the white part, and cornea.
Yeah, cornea.
Not that you can read what it is after I've written it, but the sclera is the white part around that holds the eye as a box, as a functioning piece of machinery. The cornea is your major lens. You have a second lens back here that can change its shape, or could change its shape when we were young. Mine doesn't change very much anymore. The light comes through here. If the image, which was out here about 10 feet, comes back and goes in here. Remember how the head, well, I didn't put it through the lens, but remember the arrow that was put there and came back here to be an upside down arrow? This lens focuses the picture of the arrow or whatever it is, your beloved or whatever, turns it upside down, focuses it on the back, and then the retina does the rest of the work. We'll get to a lot of that later on. But it's the thickness, or really it's the shape of that lens, of that cornea, that has an awful lot to do with how the picture is formed. If there are wrinkles in the cornea, then this picture will be wrinkled back here. And the wrinkled picture usually comes off fuzzy. We interpret it as fuzzy. So if you take your glasses off, you can't see the stars. The trees are there, but they're all fuzzy, and you don't realize their individual leaves and so on. There are two things that can be wrong right here. One of them is that thing's wrinkled. And have any ideas how that could be cured, that wrinkling?
Lens transplant?
Yes. Well, the lens transplant is back here.
I mean a corneal transplant.
Corneal transplant, particularly if it's scarred. If you can't see through it because it's a scar. That's pretty remarkable, the cornea and the lens, that you can see through it. You know, it's the only part of the body you try and see through your skin, and it doesn't work well. But this is a part of the skin that you can see through. So if it's scarred, you can't see through it, and you can have it taken off and put a new lens on. In fact, if it's scarred, that's the only thing you can do for it. But supposing it isn't scarred, just wrinkled. There are glasses out here is the easiest way, probably the cheapest. Or you can put a set of glasses right on it called contacts. Okay. Anybody here with contacts besides my wife? You have contacts? Do you wear them along with your glasses? And you use?
I've had cataract surgery.
Mm-hmm. And what is the advantage now of using your contacts with your glasses?
The ophthalmologist said it prevents getting something in your eye, getting the lens, the contact scarred.
May I also see the thickness of your glasses?
They aren't very thick.
Yeah, show them to. You see how thin those glasses are? And that's not usual for cataract. Mm. Repairs. There are several, did you have a lens implant too?
No.
No lens implant, but she has the contacts, which can take care of not having the lens here. So much is done by both of these. If you have the extra lens here and then have your glasses besides, you don't have to have it all in one piece. So it's very handy. That's a very good way of handling it.
When you do a corneal transplant, do you have to have a cornea from a human eye, or are there artificial corneas that you can use?
No, it has to be a human.
The only ones I know of are the human. And why, I was just wondering this morning as I was going over this, why you can't use a plastic eye. But evidently, the body probably rejects it or something on that order. Doesn't handle it as well as the cornea would, you know. But we do have to have. And so, corneal transplants are rather rare. And putting the, you can also take a tuck in them, shave them off. They're doing some really pretty special kind of things to correct your cornea. It sounds to me like more than I'd like to have people play with my cornea if I could have some other ways of correcting it. And usually the contact lenses and your ordinary lenses will take care of it. But we've only gotten to this so far. We're already 10 minutes on our way. If the eyeball is too long, if it comes back here, the image is right back here, the clear image, so it gets very fuzzy back here, and you have what you call short-sightedness, because you have to bring this lens, this image, then clear up. How many of you have had problems with being nearsighted? It's at least, you know, I'm so amazed at what a healthy group we have here. But at least we have to have glasses, most of us. The nearsighted, things were nice and focused, but when you looked out, you couldn't see what it was there. And that was because this eyeball was a little bit too long. Everything has to match so well. It's surprising we can see it all, to me. And again, you can correct by putting a heavier lens out in front. Or I guess it's a convex lens, a concave lens instead of a convex lens in front. So you correct with your lenses for the length of the eyeball. Any questions so far?
Where do they put the implants?
Okay, that will be, might as well look at that right now. I know this isn't good and hard with the contrast on these, but the best I can do. The lens is back here, and it can change from being quite thin, like so. When the muscle, see, this is a ring of muscles. We got a cross section here. But this is actually a ring of muscle around here. When the muscle pulls out tight, it gets thin, and it acts to bring the far things in focus. When it's done like, when it's completely relaxed, and I'm exaggerating this, it looks like that. And that allows the things close in to be in focus. At somewhere around 40 for most of us, although in one hospital I worked, a man came in at 93, I think it was, and he was sitting there reading the paper, and all of a sudden I realized he didn't have glasses on. And he read fine without glasses at 93, but that's very rare, because what happens is that this lens gets stiff and the muscles just aren't able to pull it, to change the length of it. And it gets stiff to see not close up but in the distance. That's why we end up being farsighted. Presbyopia is the fancy name for it, merely meaning elder vision, senior citizen vision. That should be pretty good, because that means that we seniors see the broad view. We may not see up close well, but we see, you know, philosophically we're really there. Probably true, too.
Is that why it's harder to see at night, too? Or when you come into a dark room?
That's probably something else. That's probably two things. You have a shutter here, or a curtain, your iris, the pretty part of your eye, you know, the thing that some of you ladies have eyes as beautiful as cows. Cows are beautiful. And that's from the color that you have in this curtain. And it shrinks down, expands. When we're young, it does it very rapidly. As we get older, it does it much slower. So that's part of it. And part of it is that we change film back here in the retina. The retina has to receive the light and make sense out of it for our brain. It has chemicals in the endings. And the chemicals work in, not exactly at all, but much the same as the film that you have in your camera. You have two types of film, one for outside, and you have one for inside. It's much more sensitive. As a youngster, our eyes will change that film more rapidly than as we get older. So both those reasons, yes?
On your diagram, where is the retina attached, and what is it attached to?
There, the retina is right there, and this is attached to the sclera, to the box that is the eye. The white part of your eye goes all around in a ball.
Like a wall.
Yeah, like the wall of the box, only it's a round one. It isn't a box, it's a...
Last year, I couldn't come to Holden because I had a detached retina. And I've always wondered where it is and how they put it back together.
That's almost magical, isn't it?
Yes.
It's right back here. It covers quite a bit, and I really can't give you the exact spot, but it covers quite a bit of the area back here. One little spot is very important. The fovea, where most of your cells, the receptor cells, are back in here. That's where you see things real clear. And it's smaller. We think we, you know, when I stand up here, I think I see all of you clearly when I'm just looking. But that's because my eye swings back and forth in my head. I'm not sitting still, and my eye is always going. You can't hold it still. You have to have some. Well, if you're peeking through a keyhole, then your eye has to stay still, because otherwise it gets blanked up. So that's the way we test for vision often, is through a pinpoint so that you have to hold it through. But anyway, most of what you when you look at your hand, the center part of your hand is seen back here on the fovea. The retina goes all the way around here. If it comes off, there are two things bad about it. One is that if it were still receiving the light, it would be all folded and wrinkled and you wouldn't have a clear picture. But the other is that the blood vessels come in here too, and they're disrupted and the whole thing goes to pieces if it stays out there. You'll be interested in looking at this. This gives a much better picture. Let's just pass it around. Interestingly enough, they have a much better drawing than I have. And what is done is they say you weld it back in, And it's a good way of thinking of riveting it back in, but you don't get in there with rivets and you don't put a... The first thing I think they did was to put a little probe in. This was what they used to do. Put a probe in that would have a high frequency radio wave coming off it that would fry, coagulate. Electrocoagulate is a fancy word, but think of it as frying, because that made, when it scarred then, that scar held the retina back to the wall that it was supposed to stick on. And that kept the blood vessels all coming in correctly and so on. And they do it at appropriate places. Well, it's easier now with a laser. What did they do? Did they use a laser on your eye?
No.
Did they use a probe?
I don't know that. There was surgery of some kind, not laser.
Uh-huh.
And he said that there were two cracks, one at 12 o'clock and one at 6, in the retina. Mm-hmm. And he had to put a bandage around it to keep it close together, mm-hmm. so it would weld or mend.
Well, you do all of it by scarring, naturally. I mean, that's the body's way of putting band-aids on or welding or any of it. Repairing is done by the scarring, and you put a scar in the right place, put an injury at the right place so it'll scar and hold it on.
He also told me they used to use heat, but now they use cold.
Yeah.
And they freeze it a certain degree.
Then he probably used a nitrogen, liquid nitrogen probe. Pretty fancy.
I didn't understand that.
But it's colder than even in Minnesota. It's down to, what, 160, minus 160 or something like that, mm-hmm. Fahrenheit. It's, the air has been liquefied and evaporates off and brings it down to that temperature, and that does the same as heat would. Just the fine end of the probe naturally is that cold, and you injure then repair work will do the final scarring down and holding.
I'm amazed that men can do that.
Yeah.
It is. Another way of doing it is with the laser, and it depends on how the person is, his particular skill, his or her particular skill, the physician's skill, and the tools he has in his hand. You know, I would much prefer to have a person who is well skilled with an old-fashioned way of doing it than to ask him to try a new one which he's not acquainted with.
Yes.
So it depends on what he has been trained in. And they're all good ways. With a laser, you don't have to open the eye. That's the advantage. Laser is a beam of light. You can make the beam so fine. You know, you drill holes through rocks and beads and you can control that beam so well. And you say, I gotta have a spot over here welded. So you have your laser here, goes through, and actually what you do is you look at where it's going and then zap it, and there's a lot of heat. It tells there are three different types of whether you do it fast and with a very high, so if you get a high temperature, or do it slowly. There are a number of different ways, but that is what you're really doing. And it's easier to do it with light if you've got all the machines, and if your eye works all right for it. So that, you know, all these things got to work in. Whatever you do to correct that, you have to have an injury, and the injury will scar, and the scar will tie it in place.
What causes the detachment?
Okay, what caused yours?
The ophthalmologist told me that I had an excessive amount of fluid in the eye, and these two cracks allowed the fluid to get between the retina and the wall and push the retina off. Mm-hmm. That's the way they explained it.
You know, any way that will end up tearing the retina off is going to do it. So, and in your case, that was undoubtedly the way. Now, some people have to be very careful about shock, because like maybe you saw the backhoe there the other day. He was using that and he was trying to get a big rock out of there, and the machine was jumping up and down instead of the rock, and all of a sudden that the screen, the glass in front, his windshield, which he'd had above him, wham, down in front of him, because he jumped. And if you have trouble with it, you may have to be careful that that doesn't happen to the rest. Don't try and pull big rocks out.
What is the cause of the degeneration of the retina?
Have you any ideas?
No, but I'd like to know. When you get older, macular degeneration.
The macular, this fovea of the macula here, that's talking about the part that is the most important. Anybody else have any ideas on it?
Is it aging?
Isn't it just age and time?
Might be. I really honestly can't give you the exact the reason for the degeneration.
I have a couple of friends who have, but they say they have aging eyes and they're going almost blind, but the doctor said they will never be completely blind and there's nothing they can do for it.
One of the things that I'm sure happens to all of us, there are millions probably, of cells on the back of the, in this retina. Our cells are all dying, but not at the same time. So a few drop out, and particularly brain cells. In the back, the retina is part of the brain, really. When it forms from the same material as your brain. So when you look into your beloved's eyes, you're looking right into her brains. That's how we find out about all these things about you ladies. And I imagine that what is happening is that we drop them out, and I have a much harder time reading fine print now than I did. I'm beginning to like choose books that have a little larger print. Pretty soon I probably will need even larger print. And this is probably due, in part at least, to the dropping out of the cells here, so you don't have a chance to be as fine. You can't see as the rods aren't as close together. I can't really give you one of them. What is it? Somebody popped it out on me just the other day. There's another retinal degeneration inherited, shows up and may show up someplace in childhood. I really don't know this. This is one of the things that you should ask your ophthalmologist about. These are fairly rare, fortunately. They're not the kind of things that are likely to happen to us. Even the retinal detachment probably won't happen, may not happen to you again. It's not common. Not like wearing glasses.
What is the thing that happened to you, though, that is common?
Now, that's back here. There is a jello, shall we say, called a vitreous humor. It isn't funny, even if it is a vitreous humor. Humor merely means that it's a liquid. This is a stickier liquid, more solid, pretty much like jello. It's got a fine network through it to hold the shape of your eyeball correctly. So the hydraulics of this, you know, it's filled with water and that helps keep it in shape. And the round ball shape of the eye is a handy one. It'd be much harder to keep it square than to keep it round. And then it's filled with this vitreous humor. And that, what happens to Jell-O if you let it sit around too long? It may melt, but if it's in the refrigerator, but you've forgotten it,
dries up.
Yeah, dries up. And one day I was driving on the, one night I was driving on the freeway. I couldn't imagine why people were flashing lights over there. Every time I'd look over there, there'd be flashing lights, but when I looked, actually got my eye over there, I couldn't see what in the world they were doing. I got rather disturbed with people who would do that. I asked Rosemary what in the world was going on. She didn't see any of it. What had happened was that this had dried up a little, and this is quite common. It detaches. Now, this is not retinal detachment. It's vitreous humor detachment. And as you, what happened was I'd look over to one side, that would jiggle this jello in here, pull it away from, a little bit away from the retina, and anything that stimulates your, the cells back there looks like light. So I saw flashes, and I was just checking last night about it. If it's real dark, I look to the side, move my eye quickly, I can still see a few flashes, sort of like that. Sometimes three, sometimes four, five. I don't know, have any of you ever noticed that? Paul, you've noticed it? It has to be sort of special. I wouldn't have noticed it for a long time.
If I wake up in the night, which at my age, men sometimes do, quickly turn my eyes from one side to the other, it looks like a streak, mm-hmm. a light streak of light. Is that what you're talking about?
It most probably is. You can have a few of these at any age, but those that are particularly sensitive to eye movement are probably due to this particular thing. Now, knowing about retinal detachment and all this, I got in contact pretty, of course it was on a weekend, but the next Monday I was down at the ophthalmologist's office, and he looked at me and said, no, it's not retinal detachment, it's just vitreous humor detachment, and it very rarely is dangerous if this pulls a little bit of the retina along with it, and then the pressure may get in behind it and so on, but ordinarily it is not. Just check in 2 years.
Anything done for it? I mean,
you don't need anything done mm-hmm. for it.
But it never really comes together again, does it?
The jello doesn't reform.
No. When they take the pressure, what is happening? What shows the doctor the pressure?
Okay. There's the anterior chamber and the posterior chamber here. This lens pretty well separates the two. There are drainage holes in there. There's a drainage hole that drains out from the anterior chamber there in the iris. Usually it's the iris. These two, when you have glaucoma and so on, or this can cause a glaucoma, if this iris gets attached to the lens, you're going to have a closed place in there. There's water being formed here but can't be drained and so on. Let's see, I want to get the exact question again now.
The pressure.
Pressure, okay. So there is pressure built up in the eye, but hopefully it will drain as fast as it's built up. I don't remember now, what is it, 20 millimeters, 40 millimeters pressure, something like that, is the normal one. So that when you, forms and drains at the same time. The way we used to do it, which was more traumatic to the patient, was take a little weight on, sort of like on a balance scale, let that lie on the cornea, so you'd have to anesthetize the cornea, because we have those reflexes that we just don't let people play with our eye. And then you'd see when this would bend. And when it bent in, that would say that you have more pressure on the outside than the inside. Well, now they puff. Any of you have noticed when they checked your eye that they squirted some hair at you? Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what they were doing. And they don't have to anesthetize the eye that way. We all jumped, or at least I did. But then, and I don't know how the machine works, but the exact way it works. But the main idea is that it's when the cornea bends in, then you know that you've hit the exact pressure of the inside.
That's what I was wondering. What part of the eye they were working on?
Well, there is so much in the eye that we're not going to cover it all, but that's fine. We'll get what really interests us. Cataracts. Any of you have had cataracts? Anybody else?
I don't have cataracts, but every so often I get white lights, and they're out about here, and they're going like this, and they're real bright. But if I keep up my potassium, it doesn't do that. Now, what causes it? What
again,
is do it happening?
I'm not sure just what is happening on those.
It seems like it's out about this distance, and they're going like this, and they're zigzag white lights.
I know what is happening. Your cells back here are being stimulated, and the only thing they see is light. I mean, if they get stimulated by pressure, you can do it. You can close your eyes, rub your eyes, and you see all kinds of beautiful patterns. Sometimes I like to lie in bed and just play with that pattern. Oh, that's a lot of beautiful patterns. But that's the same way. The pressure is causing your translated by your retina as light.
So far it only lasts maybe about 5-10 minutes, thank goodness, because I can't see nothing when it's doing it.
What does your doctor say about it?
Well, he doesn't think potassium has anything to do with it, but as long as I take my potassium, I don't get it.
That's good enough for me, I guess, but I really wouldn't know what the exact mechanism is. That and why the potassium has something to do with it.
Yeah. He don't either, but I proved through the years that if I go without my potassium is when I get them. Mm-hmm. And if I take my potassium, I don't get them.
If the proof of the pudding is the eating thereof. Excuse me for stealing your parables.
Okay.
You just made a comment about a question that I was going to ask. You mentioned about rubbing your eyes, and I used to have hay fever. Well, I guess I still have hay fever, but I got into the bad habit of rubbing the daylights out of my eyes, and now that I no longer have that much hay fever, I still find myself rubbing the dickens out of my eyes all the time. And is that bad? Can you injure your eyes? Or?
Well, I don't think you can injure them, but if the lids are irritated. Suppose you get something in your eye, you get a mold of some kind in your eye, speck, and you rub, and naturally you will rub your eye like with sandpaper.
I had that happen too.
Yeah. And that you don't want to do, surely. When they're inflamed, rubbing them really won't do any good, because it just it feels good to do it, and then it's worse after you get through. What we it was suggested to us that if you need to rub your eye, which it's a real temptation and real drive to rub the other eye when you have only one, and maybe you'd have both eyes with so you know, use that. But if you get something in one eye, in the right eye, rub the left one, because that will increase the amount of water coming out, you know, your tears, and will sometimes flood out whatever it is that you have it that isn't stuck to. Well, let's be sure to cover cataracts. Let's get back to the lens. We'll skip the iris at the moment. Come back to it if you have questions on it. This lens, two things usually can happen to it. One of them, it too can be not a perfect sphere. you know, the surface can be wrinkled, and then you have to have glasses to take care of that wrinkling. But usually the wrinkling is out here. As when we're young, this thing, it's nice and soft and pliable, and you can pull it out and you can do it quickly. As we get older, it takes longer to look from a distance to up close, that's one thing. Until finally, you really can't look up close at all. That's too, and it's funny, you'd think that it would freeze up in the relaxed way, but it does freeze up in the long part, and so therefore you can see only in the distance. You correct that with the lens. I just have to tell you about a personal thing that I think is most interesting and tells how much of seeing we do with our brain. When I take my glasses off now and I walk along, I'm walking, it feels like to me, walking out of a hole about 6 inches, maybe 8 inches, especially when I look down about like so. And if I've been walking a while, it's even more evident. And it makes me real tired because I've got to climb all day long, you know. But the eye has gotten, or the brain has gotten used to adjusting for looking through my trifocals and says, well, that's, the eye is seeing crazy. That really is a flat. What the eye is bringing to me, says the brain, is really a flat piece of sidewalk. And so I'll interpret it as that. Then when it has gotten used to interpreting this distorted view as being flat, then when I have the correct view, it says, well, I'm sorry, but that really, that's all crooked now. That would be that's grist for a good sermon, isn't it? That when we get used to something warped enough, then we see the truth. Why, the truth will look as though it were warped. It's just that an awful lot of our seeing is done with our brain, interpreting, in other words, what we see. The second thing that will happen to this, and if you're going to have a when you have a cataract, now we take it off there. This lens not only gets stiff, it is milky. And it gets more and more milky. The light can come through the eye less light can come through because of that milkiness. It's like an opal, the window on the bathroom and so on. So then the iris, which is trying to adjust the amount of light coming into the retina, opens up wide. And that means that when you look into a person's eyes that has cataracts, you see something milky behind there. And for ages, people have called it, he has a film over his eyes. Actually, it isn't over the eyes, way back here in the lens. But usually you don't go looking that close, and you don't have an ophthalmoscope, you don't use the lens to look that close. So it looks as though it's a film over it, but it is not. It's back here, it's this lens, and all that's happened, it's still a good lens, except that it's milky, and you can't see through a milky lens. It doesn't go overnight, it gets gradually more and more milky, more and more solid. It's surprising how much you can see through a slightly milky lens. I've looked at people's eyes and I said they can't possibly see anything through there, and they can breathe and hold it. It isn't as good as before, but they do pretty well. And you don't like to monkey with an eye until you really need to. So that's why they say, one of the reasons for saying wait until it's ripe, because we don't like to have our eyes monkeyed with. So when it is ripe, you can take it out, you just slip a knife in and cut the attachment around, slip that lens out. then you've got to have some kind of a lens to make up for this one. And there are many ways you can do it. You can use glasses. You have a real heavy glass, and glasses are inconvenient for making up for this lens, because it's hard to make a set of glasses that you can see out at the edges of your vision. So you tend to come in. You tend to have a good vision right in the middle, but you can't see much from the sides. That's inconvenient because you don't notice somebody coming up to you. You don't notice people walking up there and so on. One of the neatest ways, I think, is when they take this out, oftentimes they'll leave this back part in here, take the lens out, and slip another lens in, the plastic lens. It has to be a special kind of plastic, can't be just any old kind of plastic. It has to be something that won't react with the material that the eye won't react to, that has the right amount of change the way that the light comes through it, because that has to be different from the vitreous back here and so on. But when you can slip them in, you tie them down several spots around, and you see in one spot. Naturally, you can't change the thickness of that lens. You don't have lenses, artificial lenses, that you can stretch and bring back like we did our other one. But you can have it there.
Yeah. I thought I remembered reading not too long ago that they do have the kind now that they can put it in. What they put in there is kind of like in a little plastic sack, and it's actually possible to change it just as a natural one.
You can see how, you know, if you had a liquid in there and you had it would be possible, and maybe we'll be really able to get this worked out. It'd be great if you did. As far as I know, it's not done routinely now. You don't just go up and say that's the one kind
I
want.
But I think it should be.
Right.
Can they ever repeat an implant?
Repeat it. In other words, if one of the things that does happen, I suppose one of them could be that it doesn't take.
Yeah, that it slips or something.
And if it slips, of course, then you don't get your image in the right place back here. Another thing that can happen is that this tissue back here, as it states in that piece of paper that was going around there, that this tissue can become milky. And then you need to get rid of that, and they do that with a laser, burn a series of little holes, and it comes apart like a zipper. So those are a couple of the things, and it depends on how much scarring there is, how much scarring there would be. Theoretically, you could put it in there every day if you wanted to, but it depends on the other things that happen. Some people would scar, some people, you know, could you attach it, would it do the same thing? So that in what is actually done has to depend on you, in your body, and what our experience with your body is. Any other questions about the cataract? I always see cataracts of water coming across your eye. I don't know how they got that name. Sure, it has nothing to do with it.
I have another question. Mm-hmm. On cataract, hereditary?
No. The best that I've seen in the literature does not say it is. If there is a strong tendency in a family, you'd question that. But as far as I know, it is not hereditary.
My ophthalmologist said that you have them when you're small and they progress as you get older.
Well, that's interesting.
Diabetics.
Yes, and I'm not sure why. Probably it's the diabetics have problems with the nutrition of arteries, certainly, and of different they have a lot of trouble with their eyes. Why they get them, I don't know, but that's very true. Some people get cataracts at 40 without any other kind of thing that, and that may be hereditary, I'm not sure about that, those early cataracts. They're not that common, really. I mean, among the group of us, how many? There's one cataract? Two?
I have two implants. I have had cataracts.
Cataract three?
I have stars.
Okay. That's more like, what, 20%? It still isn't, well, it certainly isn't rare, but it isn't that common. It's interesting that we who have group here who have so such little heart problems have more cataract problems. Why? I don't know. Okay, other questions? Anything that you're particularly interested in?
Can you tell a little bit about when people get those black circles that go back and forth? That's what I've got, one that's right in the middle. Goes, when I look, it goes like this all the time.
You're sort of a black spot, a speck.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
A speck that goes
does
across.
Does it float or does it stay?
It floats across when I look.
Yeah.
I shut my eye, of course, I don't see it, but when I look, it just constantly.
But then when you look back again, it's right there.
It's there all the time when I'm looking. Like if I look at a ceiling that's white, mm-hmm. I can see it all the time. It's a circle. It's a regular circle.
Well, there are different shapes to it. And you could see what would happen, supposing that you have in this network here, supposing you have some kind of a speck form, a tiny clot. It would paint a picture there, wouldn't it? I mean, the light couldn't go through, and so it would look like a dark spot. And what would happen when you turn your eye? It would move around too, you see. It wouldn't actually move as far as your eye was concerned, but your eye moving makes you feel. In fact, all of us probably get what they call floaters every once in a while, but they don't stay like yours.
I've had mine a whole year.
Yeah. But we get floaters, and then the tendency is you want to keep look at it because it isn't right smack
mine's
in the
right,
middle.
Mine is right here in the middle, and it just just halfway, and it goes across wherever I look. It just goes like this whenever I'm reading or whatever I'm doing, constantly.
Okay, so it's probably actually a floater, something that's floating in there, most likely a little clot.
Yes. Floating cell.
Probably bigger than the cell.
I had like threads floating in, so that's dead tissue.
Anything that would be in here would be seen because it's thrown on the back of your lens. And of course it's much magnified. It's much, whatever you see there is much smaller than it looks because you're throwing it out against the mountain and it might block out the mountain. You know, you don't have a mountain back in the back of your eye. So, any other questions on that?
Years ago, I had a yellow blob come on my right eye, but it was gone in a few seconds, and I've never had that again. But on the left eye, a few years after that, it was like a black that came over my eye, and I couldn't see out of that eye. Well, I waited for a couple of weeks and began to become like a lace. I could see through it, and it was more like charcoal instead of the black. So then I went to the doctor and he said, well, it'll get better. There's nothing to do for it. Come back in 2 weeks. So first I made an appointment, then I thought, well, it's getting better. He can't do anything for it. Why should I go back and pay $35 to say, you're seeing a little better? That's what we all do.
Did it get better?
My appointment. It's gone.
It's gone.
I have the floaters.
Yeah.
But when I bat my eyes, they kind of go away.
What did he say was the problem?
You've told me more than he did.
Mine said
ophthalmologist.
When you get over 35 years of age, your eyes change, and He says, anybody over 55 with giant McGarns. And then I get those spots. Hmm. He says, that'll go away eventually, nothing they can do either. But my brother had a detached retina, and that's how his started. So then, of course, I thought about that.
Yeah, well, and then these are the kind of things that you want to be sure about. Now, most of the things, fortunately, aren't disastrous. But what you want to do is to get it early, so that if there is something disastrous on its way, you can check that. And that's about the only excuse I can see for that extra $35. But that $35 is worth it if you can check some of
the... That was a few years back. I don't know what he's charging now.
Probably $35.
In Sun City?
Yes.
No,
I have what the doctors call arthritis. Not arthritis, but arthritis. Mm-hmm. And it was the ophthalmologist that discovered it, and the only one that can monitor it. What does he see that tells him?
Like I was saying, the eye is such a handy thing because you can look inside the body. Uh-huh. You know, you look in and you look back at this, if it's the rest of it's clear, you can see this whole part back here. And there are, I'm not good at drawing this kind of thing, but there are vessels going all over here, arteries and veins going all over the place. So this is part of the body that where the only place where you can look at arteries. And that's why he's the one. Yeah, arteritis means inflammation of the arteries.
Yes.
And that's where they can be seen, because you can look back here and here's out plain daylight.
I wondered what he saw, because he's the only one that... Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When you get your eyes examined, the ophthalmologist will look at it, and several times he's commented about no evidence of high blood pressure. Can you tell through the eye if a person has high blood pressure?
Again, you're looking at the arteries, and arteries, if for people with high blood pressure, there are two things that happen. One is that you can see the hardening of the arteries there. They look silver. Mm-hmm. Instead of being their nice, neat color, they're silver. So they have silver threading. I don't remember the term we use, but they become silver if they're hardened. The other thing that happens is that arteries and veins will cross over each other. And the artery sometimes will too. And when you look at look back there, you can see that they're bumping into each other, they're nicked. It's a rough way of looking at it, but it's a way to look at what's happening, not just what your pressure is, but what is that pressure doing to you over a long time. So looking in your eye is very important to the person who wants to control your blood pressure. Sounds crazy, but this is the reason for it. In fact, this is the place you can see the brain, because this is part of the brain, and a lot of thinking is going on in your eyes, in the sense that here you have maybe 10 cells that go down to 5 cells, because there is a ganglion here where they come together, and another 5 cells, so that all of these can go out over to the brain proper.